Thank you, Kim. So this is a project actually done by our regional collaborative. So my disclosure is that I have no relationships to disclose because I'm a government employee, and I'd love to have some relationships to disclose. For those of you who don't know, the country is divided into seven regional genetics and newborn screening service collaboratives funded by the Health Resources and Services Administration. You can see a picture of all the regional collaboratives here. The purpose of the regional collaboratives is to improve newborn screening and genetic services. We are the western states, which includes Alaska, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, California, Hawaii, and Guam, which is probably like way off to the bottom left here that you can't see because it's closer to the Philippines. And I am the project director for the Western States Genetics Collaborative. So in our Western States Collaborative, we have diverse stakeholders. As you can tell from our states in our collaborative, we have everyone from Alaska natives to Native Hawaiians, and then of course our Guam people. We have numerous initiatives to improve genetics and newborn screening services, and this topic that we're going to talk about today is our portable health record, which is just one of the projects that we do in our Western States region. So background of this is in 2008, when there was a national climate for moving towards electronic health records, that's when the Office of Health Information Technology nationally was really trying to push everyone towards this initiative. And then there was also a big push towards emergency preparedness and contingency planning. The Children with Special Health Needs services also had a drive for coordination of services between adolescents and transition activities. Our family advocates work group and our primary care provider work group decided that a portable health record specific to children with genetic conditions would be helpful for our families that had children with genetic conditions, and for young adults that had genetic conditions in times of transition, especially to adult providers or in times of emergency. So what the primary care providers in our region did with the Family Advocates Work Group is they collected all the different portable health records that had been developed by many different groups. The one that we found most useful was the one developed by the American Academy of Pediatrics, which should not be surprising since they're very into transition and helping children transition into adult care. However, when the group looked at the form, they realized, of course, we had to adapt the form because it was geared towards children that didn't have special health needs, especially not genetic health needs. So they took the primary care provider expertise and the family advocate's expertise and started revising the form so that it could fit better with what we wanted to do with the children with special health needs. So it was an iterative process of review and edit among these two groups of people, and it took quite a long time because most of the people that work within our collaborative do it as volunteer work. No one is really paid to do this, and so they do it out of their passion for helping children with special health needs. So the group decided that the form would be used in times of transition or emergency. You could use it by families could use it, providers could use it, caregivers could use it, and it's designed to be completed within the family provider partnership to reflect the medical best practice. Because these kids have complex medical needs, it really needed to be a partnership between the physician and care providers looking after the child and the child's family or the child, him or herself, to fill out this form. So, I didn't put a copy of the form up because you would never be able to read it. It's got tiny writing when you put it up on the screen. So I did a slide to break down the different sections. So the beginning has instructions for the family and providers. Our family advocates, when they reviewed the form, I guess the American Academy of Pediatrics form didn't have very detailed instructions, and they felt that this form needed more instructions to help the families and the providers understand what the form was for and how to fill it out. Of course, we have similar things to what other children would have, allergies and procedures to avoid, the provider lists and the contacts, the diagnoses, age at diagnoses, who made the diagnoses is very important because these children, of course, usually had a genetic diagnosis. medications, formula, food, supplements, procedures needed. This part was very small in the American Academy of Pediatrics form. I think our parents laughed when they saw there was like 3 or 4 spaces for medications, and they were like, "I think we need 12." You know, so the parents were very good at increasing the number of spaces needed. What kind of surgeries the child had, health status and management instructions for the child. This next section, behaviors and communication, was the section that we added that wasn't on the American Academy of Pediatrics form, because the parents said children with special health needs may not be able to communicate as well as a child that doesn't have a special health need. So what does it mean when they're trying to communicate a feeling to you? Do they have a special sign that they use? Do they, if they're in pain, what do they signal when they're in pain? So that was something that we hadn't realized would be something important, but the family advocates knew, because this is the life they lead, and the primary care providers that look after these children knew it. So that was a section that we added on there. And then a section for comments, of course. So the plan to evaluate this form, because we wanted to test the form to make sure it was usable, was we would recruit a sample of 16 parents, young adults, and 16 physicians. Our plan was that once we had the families fill out the form, we would find physicians in other states that weren't currently looking after that child, and see if the physician could understand, based on looking at the form, how that child needed care and whether that care was appropriate, by then comparing it to the care the child was getting at their regular physician. We were recruiting through our family advocates work group to help, and most of these family advocate work group people are working with the Family to Family Health Information Center, is funded by HRSA, or with Family Voices. So then after the family completed the test personal portable health record, we would have our evaluator do open-ended, semi-structured telephone interview calls with them, seeing how hard it was to use, what was the advantage or disadvantage of this form, and get responses, qualitative and quantitative responses. We had our IRB approval by the Hawaii Department of Health. So in September 2010, the family work group started recruiting for parents and youth to fill out the form. We offered a $50 reimbursement, because we thought that would be incentive. We also thought the incentive was they would have a completed portable health record, which would be very helpful to their family. It wasn't something that they would test and they could just throw away and wouldn't be helpful. When we recruited, we got 13 people who said they were interested. However, only 4 people with 3 filled out personal health records actually got interviewed, and we had passive decline. So if we didn't go chasing after them, we would try contacting them 2 or 3 times, and then we would not bother them anymore. And so our participation rate was very low in this, and we were kind of perplexed, because we thought that this was helpful because the parents were telling us it would be helpful for them. So then in March, we decided to increase the incentive to $100. We got approval to expand our recruitment. We tried the genetics clinics, we did sickle cell genetics specialists, we did the Seattle Children's Hospital, we asked the nutritionists that look after the kids with metabolic disorders, we talked about this at the Association of Maternal Child Health Programs and Genetic Alliance Conference, and only 1 extra participant got referred, and that person didn't even continue on is that me? No. That's Steve. that person who would continue on to the do the personal health record. So recruitment has been a challenge. We are doing 1 final push with all the genetics clinics and the nutritionists again in our region. We're wondering if maintenance of a personal health record is actually too time-consuming for a family, even with a $100 incentive and the use of this portable health record in the future. When we had our regional summit, we had 36 stakeholders at our regional summit from all the different states, and we asked the regional summit participants, how many of you have a portable health record that you maintain on yourself in case of emergency. And two people out of the 36 actually said they did. And this is the group that said that portable health record is so important for everyone. So we were like, okay, well, if we don't do it for ourselves, I guess, you know, you can't expect other people to want to do this then. The other part was we need to develop good partnerships with the physicians, because filling out this form, our primary care provider said, it's very helpful for the families, but probably the time is not billable. So it is time consuming, but I guess in the long run, if you have a good relationship, that physician would want the child to be able to transition to care or have care in emergency situations that would be beneficial to the child. So our preliminary findings so far with the interviews that have been done are actually three young adults that are transitioning into adult care. They reported that this would increase their confidence that they're well cared for when they're admitted to hospital or any other transition time. They could give the form to the school medical center or someone else that might be looking after them. They definitely need to fill it out with a primary care provider, because there was a lot of medical information in there. And even as young adults who have been living with this condition for 18, 19 years of their lives, they still wanted the doctor to help fill out the medical information. The form could also be used to help other family members understand what their status was if they're unable to communicate. Because not all family members, grandparents, all that, know exactly what the care is for that person at that time. One reported that the form is time consuming. We knew that, but definitely worth it, which is a good response. And then one said that they were looking forward to having all of this incorporated into the online medical records that are currently being put out by all the different medical centers and the electronic health record companies. So one adult said that if the portable health record gives me something to take with me anywhere I go, traveling, moving, when filling the record out, I saw it be useful going on a trip out of state and I needed to seek medical help. In college, I went to Japan, so this would have been helpful. Everything is consolidated into one document, which is good. Makes me feel confident that everything someone would need to know is in one place. And we had told the families that they could keep paper copies. They could also put it online on Google Health or Microsoft Health Vault. There's many other options. Some could put on a flash drive if they wanted to, although we discouraged that because most emergency rooms do not let you stick in a flash drive into any of their computers in the hospital. So we said that usually is not a good thing. Another participant said that this form gives me a place to keep a record of myself for me. Some of the parts of the form I wasn't clear on, but I might have been more knowledgeable with my doctor helping me. So one of the participants hadn't had the doctor help them, but as I said, we found that this would need to be a partnership. So these are our family work group advocates that helped us with developing the form and reviewing it, and we are definitely very happy to have all of them participate. And also our primary care providers, and that is actually our last meeting of the regional summit. This is the picture of the group that most of them don't have a portable health record. So that's it. Thank you.
We have time for one or two questions, if people have questions.
Yes, James.
Have you presented this at all to vendors, to health record vendors, about needs within health records for children?
No, we haven't, because we wanted to actually validate it with these with recruiting and getting people to fill it out. So then we could move on to the next step of having the doctors review it and make sure that the information could be used by them to adequately look after the person. And so until we validate it, we didn't want to go and commercialize it or publicize it widely. And you know, so we're trying that final push to get just enough people. I think our evaluator said 10. We need 7 more. So 10. Yes?
Have you worked with the state organizations that are responsible for children with special needs, the equivalent in California CCS, to discuss reimbursement for providers to fill out those forms?
We haven't. We haven't discussed reimbursement. We actually, in our collaborative, all the leaders in our collaborative actually come from children with special health needs, maternal child health. So no one has brought that up, that it is reimbursable by children with special health needs, but do you know that it is?
Well, I know in California it's a big issue, you know, everywhere. But CCS does cover transition services. If you kind of define it under the rubric of transition.
I'll have to go back and ask my boss. Okay, thank you.